I have the most difficult task. I am between the rock and the hard place. And between you and the speaker, you want to ask them question, and also between you and the lunch that is being served on both sides of this room. So I will ask all of the distinguished speakers to join me up here at the table. While they are coming up, I finish my report. First, without giving too much justice for each speaker, I try to summarize some of the highlight the best way I see it. Although the session started with a divide, all of the speakers spoke very clearly about the continuum and the interaction and sometimes overlaps in a very multidimensional impact system. We see that drought in one end of the spectrum can cause a reduction of the agricultural production and food, which has impact on health and nutrition and the various physical part of that, from stunting of children to having a poor, healthy family and all of the tremendous negative impact that comes from. We spoke very vividly about the yield gap between those countries and community that have access to technology and those who don't. And the yield gap can be anywhere in the order of magnitude of 7 to 10-fold, which is enormous, showing that there is enough space to go and to grow and to meet the need eventually if we have the right application of technology with all of the other factors in. There is passionate appeal for indicating that women are at the center in agriculture and food and nutrition, and that's very pivotal, but very important when we look at the whole entire spectrum. Also, we emphasize all of this linkage between care, food, care, and health, and nutrition aspect or nutrition impact, as we may see it in this way. As much as we spoke about water and drought and its impact, we learned quite a great deal about water as a medium for waterborne disease. Too much water also is not very healthy. So the connection between lack of water and bad health and too much water and bad health is being made here. We heard very interesting the challenge that Canada will be facing over the next 50 years due to climatic change, where parts of Western Canada and certain part of Ontario may be subject to raising temperature, which in the meantime will raise the evapotranspiration and cause a phenomena similar to the phenomena of drought, that crop yield will be diminishing as a result. So Canada is being threatened by the same phenomena that many other parts of the world has been threatening, contrary to all common belief. So in very short, I want to open the floor for questions from you. At the end of the question session, the chair here will stop me eventually at the time of his choice. You will go and get your food from here, while first and foremost, the member of the panel of next session will have priority in getting food. Not everybody in this room is equal. Those who are going to speak are allowed to eat first and continue the session, because the last session of the day will continue while you are eating, so you don't feel any nutritional negative impact on you. So I hope nobody will come out of this conference stunted or feeling very bad for lack of food or being embarrassed by raising temperature in the room. So I open the floor for question. We have two mics, and I can hardly see them because all I see is a shining light in my eyes. So I need somebody behind the light to identify some of the speaker for me. So I'll take the first question from here. You address your question to the group, and we will take a couple of questions first, and then I will ask the panelists to choose which questions they want to answer for that.
My name is Sam Goldberg. I wonder whether we may not be facing the possibility of researchers working across purposes. On the one hand, we have our idealists who stress the importance of clean water to food and sanitation, and they concentrate on pointing out the links to disease when you have problems of too little or too much water, etc. Then we have our realistic friends who argue that given climate change, the reality would suggest that we're going to have large areas of the world facing permanent problems of water shortages. And wouldn't we be better off concentrating on alternatives, new crop varieties that require less water or can grow in dirty water, alternatives to in sanitation that require less water, et cetera, et cetera. Now, traditionally, scientific enterprise worked on a philosophy of let a thousand flowers bloom. But I wonder, given the question of research funds and political interference, whether we can continue to do that or whether we have to find some ways of making sure that we don't have these different groups of scientists working against each other rather than working together. And I know it's a big question, but I wonder about whether the panel has any suggestions of how we can manage to somehow coordinate the research rather than struggle for who wins out.
Let's take another question from this side.
Hello, my name is Haley Kutry. I'm a McGill undergrad student studying nutrition and international development. My question is more focused for Professor Geary, but all are welcome to obviously address it. The WHO currently is recommending for infant feeding exclusive breastfeeding the first 6 months of life, and then appropriate complementary feeding and breastfeeding for the following 18 months. In terms of infectious diseases, can infectious diseases be transmitted through breast milk? And in situations such as the devastation that's impacted Pakistan right now, would you recommend exclusive breastfeeding where we will probably be witnessing a manifestation of malaria within the next few months to an extreme extent? Thank you.
Member of the panel, answer as you wish. Just make your answer very short.
Is this on? Yeah. Okay. So a couple of parts. The breastfeeding is always a good idea, but it's not. Breast milk contains maternal antibodies, which can help prevent some infectious diseases, particularly at young ages, in the colostrum in particular. But the contamination comes from the environment. So kids put all kinds of crap in their mouths. You may have noticed this. You did it too when you were little. So it's not sufficient to protect completely against that. And there is no evidence of which I'm aware that that breastfeeding protects against malaria. So the antibodies that might be transferred don't seem to be protective. The other quality to remember is that while breastfeeding is desirable, malnutrition in mothers can lead to inability to lactate properly. So substitution may be necessary in times of real nutritional deficits. It's always a good idea to do it, but in and of itself, it's not a panacea.
You weren't directed to me, but
I'm going to jump right in here.
Ladies first, man.
Well, I'm jumping after you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't know. We both should jump together, perhaps.
Okay. One, two,
what,
three.
Jump. Okay. In terms of breastfeeding, certainly there's a lot of myth information out there as well. I've worked on a large-scale breastfeeding promotion projects in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. And we really have to understand sort of why women are facing obstacles to breastfeeding properly. And there is this myth that there's inadequate milk. I'm too malnourished to breastfeed. Well, that may affect some of the composition of the breast milk, but the actual volume of the breast milk is really induced by how often the child is put to the breast to suckle. So breastfeeding remains a key factor in our food security efforts because the breasts are there. We don't have a supply problem. And exclusive breastfeeding still remains a very critical part of optimal infant and young child feeding. And I'm just going to end it by quoting the 2006 Child Survival Lancet series, which identified optimal breastfeeding practices as having the potential to avert between 13 to 15% of unnecessary child death under 5 deaths. So that's my plug for breastfeeding.
I was going to give a technical answer as a physician to the question specifically, what can be transmitted through milk and what cannot. And I reviewed this because I was looking very heavy. The only thing that has been demonstrated to transmit through human milk is HIV. And we know that part of the transmission is. Now, recent practice is moving toward giving antiretroviruses to women during pregnancy and lactation, which reduces the virus load to virtually zero in milk, making milk safe. The other thing, however, the downside is that those mouse experiments I talked about, actually stress was being transmitted through milk. So the stress hormone and inflammatory things from the mother to the child may in fact be part of the process by which the child, in the adverse circumstances, receives the influences by virtue of what it's doing to the mother. The answer is not stopping breastfeeding, it's improving, supporting the health of the mother.
Please.
If I may address the question of whether researchers work at cross purposes, I think we can say that humans, of course, have a built-in tendency to operate in silos and not to speak with each other across silos necessarily. So, yes, I agree, coordination and interdisciplinary is always good, and in particular in agriculture, which is by definition an interdisciplinary science. Now, at the same time, it's meritorious, I think, that for people to operate in their particular fields, apply scientific reductionism and really go deep so that they got something to share with their peers elsewhere. Thirdly, in agricultural research nowadays, some of the frontier research, for example, in rice, that is being pioneered, for example, by the International Rice Research Institute, such projects as aerobic rice and the C4 rice that will improve photosynthesis and therefore productivity, those are inherently interdisciplinary research efforts, and they're being approached as such.
Another comment on that. We've been talking a lot about picking losers and winners. And as a result of the recent economic crisis, governments have backed off on picking losers and winners. When it comes to ideas about helping people, I think the only way to pick losers and winners among ideas is the ideas that win out in the actual demonstration.
On the topic of idealists versus realists, I'm not sure that I'd quite characterize them that way. I think everybody is to some degree an idealist and to some degree forced to be a realist. I think that it's very similar to the struggle I mentioned that we're having within the department about do we want to emphasize demand side or supply side or try and strike some kind of balance in terms of water and where we put our resources, which of course are limited. I don't think you can give up on one or the other. I don't think it's really fair to characterize people who care about clean water and water supply as idealists. I think they're entirely realistic within the areas they're operating in. And in other areas, I think people who are being characterized as realists for worrying about complete shortage of water in some areas, I think that applies in some areas. But in some areas, that would be well, certainly not an idealist perspective, but it may not be all that realistic in some areas where increased flooding will be a problem in some parts of Canada and other places in the world. So I think you do need both. I think it is absolutely a challenge to strike a balance when you have limited resources. And while I agree that the market is going to be the ultimate arbiter of who wins and who loses, which are the useful programs and products and which are less useful, that'll be the market decision. Certainly the public sector does have a role in deciding which attempts they're going to back in the very early stages when public sector involvement is required. And that's a very difficult thing to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Question from here and question from there again.
Hello. My name is Alan Brawl. I work with the Canadian Food Grains Bank. The Canadian Food Grains Bank supports relief and development projects, agriculture development projects in many different parts of the world with support from CETA. My question is directed to Dr. Ferroni. I very much appreciate your presentation, the toolbox of different possibilities we have to increase production to feed the world's hungry. One particular graph I found very interesting on capacity gaps. On the bottom left-hand corner, you had the low-capacity or low-capability growers. I think that's our target group, the very food-insecure people. And you emphasized the need for certain technologies, especially knowledge-based, looking at OPVs as a very effective way of increasing the production. And I think from our experience, these low-tech but very powerful interventions that are low external input are very effective in improving the production of those food insecure people. I'm wondering from your perspective, what has been your experience in terms of the relative contribution to increasing food security using those methods as opposed to higher tech or higher input methods that are commonly applied?
Yeah, thank you very much for that question. You have basically summarized it, and I think almost given yourself the answer in the sense that you cannot promote or propose to farmers technologies that they cannot absorb. At the same time, however, you are there through your extension activities, for example, to help them overcome current limitations and reach levels of higher farm capability. As we reach higher levels of farm capability, the amount, the density and depth of external inputs will by definition increase. It will have to increase. Since farming in the settings that we are talking about is the basic source of income and is actually a better source of income in many respects, including social disruption wise, than having those same people for lack of on-farm productivity migrate in search of precarious seasonal and daily employment. So now the question becomes, what is the progression of services that you supply? And the first, as I think, is agronomy. Agronomy and extension is successful in such conditions where you can build a learning environment with the communities that you're talking about, where you can build mutual trust, and where you I lost my train of thought. Where you build trust and this is what I wanted to say, and I'm sorry about this. You marry local knowledge with scientific knowledge, which by definition has to come from outside. It is those that combination that is central.
My name is MD Asaduzzaman. I'm a MSc student at McGill Mac Campus in Agriculture Economics Department. And my question is to Helen Keller International. So before I used to work for World Vision Bangladesh for food security program until 2005. It was funded by USAID. So presently I'm doing my thesis on improving food security through home gardening system in Bangladesh. So as you know, the targeting is very important to address food security for food insecure people. And as I guess, as per your presentation, you have adequately targeted the people. I mean, most of the people in the rural, those who are food insecure, they have only homestead or sometimes people who have homestead plus some cultivable land. So, so in that case, homestead is very important for their food security purposes. But those who has only the homestead and plus some cultivable land, those people, they produce something in their homestead and at the same time, they sell their labor somewhere else. And that way they are maintaining their livelihoods. So when I have studied some relevant papers on homestead home gardening, I saw a lot of literature on the traditional gardening system, improved gardening system, developed gardening system, and recently Helen Keller has conducted developed plus poultry in the home gardening in your home gardening system. But there is a lack of information on costing or opportunity cost. I mean, when you are going for developed gardening with poultry or something else, it requires capital, it requires some costing, and some opportunity cost is there. Rather, the women or household head should be involved with this thing, rather before they used to go for sell their labor somewhere else. So my thesis, my professor is here, Dr. Anwar Nasim. He's supervising me. So we are struggling with the costing information because inadequate information on cost of home gardening system in Bangladesh. So I would request you to provide some data on your home gardening plus poultry information so that I can trade off between different home gardening system for food security in Bangladesh. And my question is, I have also question is,
you better make your question short.
Yes, you have provided for developed gardening system, you have provided chicks, you have provided inputs, you have provided vaccines, and a lot of things. Do you have any data, like suppose you have conducted your program 5 years, so after 5 years, how many households are able to continue their home gardening system? So, I mean, is your program is sustainable or not? Thanks.
Thank you very much. It's really exciting to see the interest in the homestead food production model. Questions about what the costs are very good questions. And apart from that very gross analysis that we've done with total cost, total beneficiaries, there's been no further investigation to that nature, especially applying the costs against the vital parts of the program that are linked to the success of the program. And when I showed that diagram with the various boxes, those were program impact pathways. We call them PIPs, the friendly PIPs. But that now is driving the way we're looking at these programs to start to ask the questions that you've delineated, especially costs to the women for time allocation. So that's coming more into our moving ahead for the future in improving, enhancing the program. In terms of our existing data, let's talk afterwards, and I can put you in touch with some of our people on the ground to see what actually exists. And in terms of your last question, yes, the majority of households are still practicing the same techniques well after they've graduated from the program. And they are still making more income than current participants in one of the studies that we did. And I can give you the reference for that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. We have two more questions. One from this here. I guess one. Okay, one decline.
One more question.
So one more. One last question.
Meaning that I can be more extensive. But I will try to be short. Everybody waits for the lunch. But I learned from Noel that we can measure stunting by lying down. So maybe it's not that bad to wait for a bit. it's very nice to have these presentations which shows the abundance of challenges we have and the complexity of the issues. So I just want to highlight a few things. And it's very important to think about the bright, shining future, as the first presenter included, because we have achieved a lot. It doesn't mean that there is no challenges left. We have more than enough of that. So one question to all the participants in the panel is, what are the political implications of your research? So that is one question. To Noel, you say that water might be more important than diet, water quality. And I think you challenged me on that. I agree. But in other situations, the diet might be more important. So again, the context decides the importance of the challenge we have. And I would be very interested in listening to your response on your important work in Guatemala. How could that be of benefit both to the have an impact on policy and to the people. Marco Ferroni mentioned food sovereignty. And I think that despite that your lecture was very nice and very informative, I must say I reacted a bit on the definition of food sovereignty, because I guess that it depends on who you talk to, what kind of definition you get. So what I have experienced of the food sovereignty discussion is that poor countries want to use the same experience as the rich countries did in order to get out of poverty. So that is some of the basic issues in the food sovereignty discussion, as far as I understood. So to Victoria, congratulations again, but I suggest that you also include the policy dimensions. I didn't see anything about the government in the countries that you're working, despite that you have some very good frameworks. Thank you.
Thank you. Now to the panel. Start with Victoria first, okay?
Just to clarify.
We'll work out
sure.
Our way to.
In terms of political implications from a homestead food production model approach, there are implications in terms of land rights, women's rights, access to land, and those sorts of issues that have to be addressed, because those are going to be major bottlenecks. In terms of the government involvement, very much so, working with extension workers, the community level folks from agriculture and health, make no doubt about that. It's very tightly entwined. What we would love to be able to do is more work at the policy level to influence investment in nutrition or in these sorts of agricultural programs, but that, of course, comes with resources. And when you're focused on actually rolling out a program at the field level, because these are all project-driven programs, then you don't always have the flexibility to look at that bigger picture more fully. But absolutely, government involvement, no doubt about it.
I guess all of us have to talk about political implications, but Marco doesn't want to, so maybe you can ask that question again, Arnie, on the last panel. He's on that. And you can go get your food now if you don't want to answer any more questions. Okay. With regard to the political aspects of my research and any research that I do, I would hope that the findings that we have, which are applicable and safe, would be applied for the benefit of humanity. That's a really pie-in-the-sky kind of idea. But most importantly, I would like to emphasize that I think research has to be done locally as opposed to be done locally, meta-analyzed, and expanded massively. So I'm not as great a fan of the Lancet paper as you are, because the Lancet paper takes meta-analysis to the degree of, this is the biological tendency, let's scale it up to the world, and I'm not ready for that. With regard to, you didn't reinterpret what I said. I said, I think that the lessons from water insecurity will be more important for the resolution of stunting than those from food security. And that's not a scientific issue, just that food security, at least at the FAO, we've all got it, you know, got enough calories to go around. But we don't have enough water used well to go around to overcome these kind of, at the body level, the parasites, the nits, the fleas, the intestinal worms, the blood worms, the blood protozoa, all of these things which are eating away and taking the nutrients which the FAO's 100% of calories distributed is giving us. That's why I think, and certainly in research, the challenges to unpeel the onion are much greater in unpeeling the onion of where water goes than unpeeling the onion of where nutrients go.
Well, thank you very much. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I don't
have a last word.
I don't do politics.
Neither me.
I work on neglected tropical diseases, and they're neglected because they're not fatal. And governments with very limited amounts of health money to invest in health can't do everything. So our goal is to try to bring awareness of the economic consequences of these diseases and try to help design better ways to control them. Right now, we do a much better job of this in livestock agriculture in North America than we do in human medicine the rest of the world over.
Thank you very much. Any one of the panelists want to have last word? Burning issue? No? None? Oh, thank you very much. Can you join me and give a hand to... I have few announcements for you. If you have not filled the evaluation sheet, there is one on your table. Please do so. Allow the panelists of the next session to proceed first to get their lunch, and then you can get your own. There is pots and dishes on the side table. I'm not sure which side, but you will find that out. I received a question of to me personally, say, who are you? Well, I'm a farmer by upbringing. I'm an engineer by training. And I'm a bureaucrat by circumstances. For the rest of you, figure it out.
Actually, I do want a final word. The people who have the bulletins can keep them. That's it.
Thank you very much.